I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Legend Rouge Cycling Podcast for another cracking day in the Pyrenees. A crazy Tour de France stage, short but packed filled with action. Stage 6 from Tarbes to Cotteret-Cambasque. 145Ks. The first 56Ks are pretty flat with one Cat 3 in the middle of it. So, and then there's the Col d'Aspin, Col de Tourmalet combo. The Tourmalet 17K is 7.5%, an all-category climb with, what is the souvenir Jacques Gaudet again? It's not because Henri de Grange is the highest point.
I'm going to guess it's money you get because it's a heroic climb in the race. I've got absolutely no clue, okay. But from now on, that's a definition.
Yeah, let's just say it's because it's the Tourmalet, gets a special name. Then there's the descent before the step climb to Cauteret. It has 3Ks in the last third, which is steep, but largely it's false flat. A lot of false flat in just a 3K 10% section. And after yesterday, we obviously had Jai Hindley in the GC lead. So the big question was, how would Bora Hansgrohe approach the stage? Would they try and control everything? Would they go for this? Would they just let a big break go? And out of neutral, Benji, it kicked off, like just straight out of the gun, Van Aert launched.
Van Aert launched and the first group got ahead. That group was quite a solid group of breakaway riders. Jumbo in there with Van Aert, like you said, Matteo Trentin for UAE. So we don't have this 1v1 battle of trying to get into the breakaway, then UAE countering between the two teams this time around. Straight up, those two riders in the breakaway together with Kwiatkowski. And then at the start, it was only really one rider of EF, James Shaw, Julien Alaphilippe, Arndt, Cosnefroid, Van der Poel also in there. Nylund's pretty good today. Johannessen, pretty important to mention with a teammate Greggaard and some other dudes in there. Anyway, then we get to a second attack that joins behind. Rubén Guerrero of Movistar, Perez, Paulus, Asgreen, and Naassen. So we've got extra riders now joining that breakaway. This is now a group of 19, 20? 20, I think. So pretty large group, but more importantly, no one within 8 minutes, 7 minutes. So Bora's pretty happy, but what is their reaction?
They kept the gap pretty tight, and I was kind of surprised with that. I didn't know if they wanted to stop Jumbo and UAE having a satellite rider after Tourmalet because they wanted to really defend Hindley's, you know, in case Hindley got dropped on Tourmalet, or whether they were trying to, by controlling the race with the rouleurs before the first climb, those rouleurs are going to drop on the Col d'Aspin, and then you can let the gap out and Conrad doesn't, or Jungels don't have to pace as hard as on Aspin. That might have been it. I'm not really sure what they were doing.
Okay, you mentioned satellite riders there. Van Aert and Trentin, those riders being in the breakaway, is Van Aert there 100% for a satellite ride, or do you think he also has an option for the stage?
I think he was there as a satellite rider, and that became pretty clear as we got to the Col d'Aspin. So yeah, the break formed much quicker than yesterday, as you said, and it's the fight for it. I mean, I think UAE would have wanted Soler or Groschartner in it, not Trentin, because can Trentin really make it over the top of the Tourmalet?
Not useful.
Probably not. So it's just, he's there in, you know, symbolically in the breakaway.
Yeah, his soul has already left in the gruppetto.
Yeah, and who else did we mention? We run through the other, like, Quiato looked really good today. EF, obviously, I don't know whether EF wanted the stage or KOM points because they powerless bridged across. So, it was a tug buddy galore, even for enemy. He's former enemy.
Yeah,
Johannessen's former enemy. Sorry, Nico Denz's current enemy. So, yeah, Johannessen, if he won, I would have been absolutely fine with it, with Greggaard helping him, the Dane and the Norwegian. So anyway, we get to Col d'Aspin. Bora paced the first, I would say, 6-7 kilometers, maybe even the first 8 kilometers. Van Aert's doing a lot of work on the Col d'Aspin, and then Jumbo start pacing both groups pretty hard. And that was very clear, like clear that the plan was not Van Aert's stage win. Because if you want Van Aert to win the stage, first of all, he doesn't just do the whole climb on the front. And second of all, you don't chase him.
Yeah, to spell it out here, so Wout van Aert is pacing to make sure that the gap from the breakaway to the peloton is large enough by the time he gets over the Tourmalet to still be ahead of anything that happens. So, for example, it was clear from this point onwards to me that we were going to see an attack on the Tourmalet. Because otherwise, why is Wout van Aert pacing at the front? He's not preserving for the stage win and so forth. Behind, Jumbo pacing, it balanced each other out. If Wout van Aert is pacing at the front and the peloton is pacing, the gap stays the same in Aspen. And you've got a gap of, it was 3 minutes towards the bottom, but it moved towards 3.5 minutes roughly towards the top. But the most important part is this, is the descent, no?
Well, yeah, because Jumbo basically, they've got to the front and then they go so slow in the peloton on the descent and let that gap open back up. And yeah, Van Aert, or Van der Poel was pushing the brake. I don't know why Van der Poel, Benji, chooses these stages to get in the brake. He has no chance.
I agree. I can't add much more than that. But this is not a break for him. Stage 8 or 9, I don't know which one it is.
He did this in the Giro too, last year.
He went in breakaways and he tried to benefit from the descent to then have an advantage on the climb. And he did that again today. He was pacing in the descent, in the breakaway once again, but that helps Van Aert. So Van Aert's happy with that. But then he didn't get away. And on the climb itself, he's going to drop and that happened just afterwards. We didn't mention Paolo Studicke went point on the Spain, but we were heading to the Tourmalet now, eh? And like you said, the fact that Jumbo Visma is slowing down in the peloton to make sure that the gap expands to the breakaway so that Wout van Aert can stay ahead by the top of the Tourmalet, well, that was happening, eh? The gap was nearly 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was like it'd gone way, way out. And it was clear, I think that was the answer, that Bora Hansgrohe were like, we'll do with our strong rulers, Van Poppel, we'll do the flat and then the climb. We have no interest in making the climbs difficult or too difficult. So they're pacing. The gap goes down a little bit when they're pacing, maybe to the breakaway. And then Wout van Aert again starts pacing. He does the whole, well, no, sorry, Alaphilippe attacked. Why?
My man is thinking that he's Contador in his prime, because like he always attacks very early on a climb because maybe he wants to get some kind of advantage and hope that the group stops cooperating, but he always implodes. Like, I haven't seen Alaphilippe attack in a breakaway and not implode since 2018, 2019. 2019, he was a semi-GC rider, but I think 2018 was the one where he won the Polkadot jersey. I don't remember fully. But
He's done way too much this first week.
He's always attacking and pacing when he doesn't need to be attacking and pacing.
Yeah.
Regardless, he was being caught again because Wout van Aert was still pacing in that group and we were waiting for something. We were waiting for something on the Tourmalet at the start. In the peloton, Bora took over a bit because the first portion of the Tourmalet is basically not falls flat, but 4 or 5%, no?
Yeah, it's like the whole climb, they include, you know, people say the Tourmalet is 17Ks long, but as you said, the first 4Ks of that big ring, you know, 2-3%. It's really the last 13 kilometers are the steepest. And there's also, you know, 8.89% right at the end. And it goes up to 2,110 meters. It's not high, high altitude, but there's a significant difference between the power you can put out up there and at sea level. So it's a big old climb. But yeah, the Jumbo Visma event, Benji, they eventually came to the front with Laporte, who'd also paced Aspin. I was like, well, Laporte's not going to drop anybody.
Yeah, and it was slow.
It was a slow enough pace, and he, you know, Wout van Aert's not losing any time. And I think they were probably playing with the idea of, well, you want Van Aert over the top, how much time does he need? Because when the GC guys attack, you know, they can do the last kilometer of a climb at high altitude like this. So much, they can take a minute and a half in 1 kilometer on a guy who's been in a breakaway and is not a GC rider. So maybe it was the gap to Van Aert. It was still a very, very firm pace. They still did the Tourmalet very hard. Eventually he pulls, it's not really, it's quite linear, isn't it? Jumbo just cycle through their riders.
Except one, Benoit.
Benoit, yeah, like Laporte goes, then Van Hooijdonk does a long pull.
Yeah. A bit too long?
Yeah, maybe Van Baarle could have come up, maybe Van Hooijdonk's pace was good. We do see some riders start to, and the group does get thinner now.
Yeah.
Benoit drops off his pace, as you said. The breakaway again. It's just Wout van Aert pulling with Paulus. That group is thinned down a lot, though. It's got Paulus, Guerrero, Kwiatkowski, James Shaw. Who else was in there? Johannesson. They were the best guys in the breakaway.
Would you say that, regardless of what happens in the stage at this point onwards, that Wout van Aert could have won the stage?
Yeah, I think so.
He was fucking strong.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe it was Jo that go right. After all. He looked very strong on the stage, obviously, but Kwiatkowski looked very, very good too, but he obviously didn't have to do the work of Van Aert. So I'm not so sure, Benji. I mean, Johannesson's still a pretty good rider and his finish is still uphill with a steep section, I don't think it's a guarantee Van Aert. I mean, maybe he attacks in a different section, but I don't think it's correct to say Van Aert would have just won this stage automatically. That's a bit disrespectful to Guerrero, Kwiatkowski, Johannessen, who I thought were very, very impressive. But yeah, Jumbo eventually get to Van Baarle. We're getting, it's now 4Ks to the top of Tourmalet and it's really heating up. Van Baarle does a short pull and then Keldegoat didn't pull yesterday. I thought he might have, but I think he just got straight up dropped on Marie Blanc. Keldman just pulls really hard and the race explodes. 3Ks or something to go. Mike, like the whole of UAE are gone.
Mate.
Ineos have got, like it goes, it literally went from a group of 25 to four.
Yeah, it went to five technically.
Yeah.
Kelderman, Kuss, Vingegaard, Pog and Hindley. Instantly, there was a gap to the others. Buchmann instantly shredded himself. He worked today, but we'll get to that a bit later. We also have the likes of Micah was dropping, like you said. Everybody else has disappeared. Yeah. Skelmoser dropping off the larger group of GC riders there, which shows that on these larger climbs, is he weaker on these larger climbs? Because in Swiss, there's also larger climbs, no?
But he was dropping and never pulling on the climbs either in Swiss. He was always in the wheels and trying to come back on the descent. And it was, you know, and he still lost a lot of time to goal on that stage. And he could play with his GC gap. So, you know, on Marie Blanc and the other climbs, also Skelmoser was dropped. And he used the descent very aggressively to come back. But on the Tourmalet, you can't. It's a 45-minute climb. And so Hindley made the decision. He was going to try and stay with Vingegaard and Pogacar. And that eventually didn't work out for him because Kelderman drops him off the wheel while he's pacing before Kuss takes over. Not like a lead out. Well, it was a lead out, but like a long, hard pull. And Pogacar was looking a lot less labored than yesterday, Benji.
Yep, he was looking less labored than yesterday. But I'll be honest, yesterday before he cracked, there were some signs that he didn't look amazing, but I also was like, can't be true, right? He can't drop this early. So I'm living in this fantasy right now where I'm like hoping that he's not going to drop on this climb, because the best scenario that can happen right now is that Pogacar can stay in the wheel of Jonas Vingegaard. And after that Kuss pull, when Vingegaard went, absolutely sniped it, but it also was a pace that Pogacar could hold for a longer portion of time, it seems. And I was getting more and more hope that we have a Tour de France in our hands, that we have a race in our hands. And I was just hoping for Pogacar not to do up. Like, I straight up was praying. I was praying. And then my mom texted me. My mom was like, Benji, I don't know what's going on. Why is Vingegaard pacing after Wout van Aert?
True. No, that is true. Maybe the Flemish public will say that after today. But
I'm not joking. She sent that.
She could get a job on Sports. But yeah, it's if Poggi drops there on Tourmalet, if Pogacar drops there, he's going to lose so much time on the descent. His teammates are over a minute behind him already. The gap had gone to 90 seconds. And the Wout van Aert would be able to pace Vingegaard in that descent and the base of Carteret. So that would have been probably, a huge time loss if he got dropped on the Tourmalet. He was able to hold on.
Yeah.
Did Vingegaard go too much on Tourmalet? In the end, he is putting Hindley behind. So he is putting Hindley to bed.
Mate, 2 minutes.
Yeah, so Hindley's gone. And you don't have to worry about him again for the rest of the race. But I think Van Aert made a mistake here. He got over the top by 40 seconds and didn't wait at the top or even near the top. What if Vingegaard had dropped Pogacar by 2-3 seconds?
I agree, but I also feel like that's something that should come from the team card. The team card should say you should wait at the top instead of try and slow down a bit at the start of the descent so that Vingegaard can catch up with you. Of course, Wout van Aert needs to restart fast enough so that he has the momentum just in case. Let's say that Vingegaard drops Pogacar with 50 meters to go near the top.
Yeah.
Wout van Aert needs to have momentum already. Can't just be standing there.
True.
So that's the one thing that could lead to Wout van Aert just not waiting directly at the top.
And he doesn't know how far they are behind him, I guess.
Maybe he's all. And also, we saw the thing last year where Nathan van Hooijdonk was just going a bit too slow on the descent and didn't know they were coming.
Exactly that. You're right. That did happen.
So is that the reason why they don't want to do that? I think there's some timing things that I can't tell if they can get that right.
Yeah. I mean, does van Aert wait in the first hairpin and look up the mountain? Because then you got a better view. And then wait to see them coming down and then start pedaling. I don't know. But certainly, the reason I mention this is because it was very, very clear that Pogacar couldn't follow Vingegaard's wheel in the corners of the start of the Tourmalet. And the start
in the descent.
In the descent. The start of the descent was quite technical, or not that technical, to be honest. It was just, you know, hairpins. And yeah, at a certain point, Vingegaard had such a gap, I think he attacked Pogacar or tried to start pushing on. But obviously, you know, he's not going to push on a whole descent with Pogacar 2 meters behind him, trying to drop him on the descent. So, but Van Aert wasn't there. But then again, Van Aert wasn't. So he eventually catches up to Van Aert. Hindley's group, I think Bardet attacked on Tourmalet. I don't know. He's kind of like his Galibier attack. Bardet attacking there with, you know, UAE had three, Ineos had multiple. I don't think that was the best use of resources. But were you surprised to see at that point on Tourmalet all of UAE chasing with Hindley in the wheel? Because Hindley's ahead of Pog on GC.
Yeah. It is interesting, but it's also a scenario where I don't think Pogacar is overly scared of Hindley yet, even though yesterday happened. I think Pogacar probably was thinking, I'm here to win the Tour de France. And yes, maybe they're pacing Adam Yates and maybe they're trying to make it a bit harder for the people that are also in that group. But maybe it's also that Pogacar would feel more confident if he has some domestiques at least within 2 minutes of him instead of outside of 2 minutes of him. Because they're in the shadow realm anyway. Hindley's taken care of anyway.
Exactly. Hindley's never coming back. It's a question of how much time does he lose, you know, on the stage. Is it 2? Is it 3? Is it 4 minutes? And yeah, so Vingegaard catches up to Van Aert. As we saw, Van Aert in the corners was nowhere near as good as Vingegaard. Like, they were going slower on the descent, even though on the non-technical fast section, you of course want Van Aert, a big body, to break the wind in front of you. But through the corners, Vingegaard and even Pogacar were kind of faster than him.
Is that related to Vingegaard and Pogacar's size? Because Luke told us this, because he's a technician, a real man behind the scenes here. When it comes to descending, obviously Wout van Aert has technique, eh? We know it from cyclocross and so forth. So that's not really the biggest issue here, but is it the center of gravity?
I don't know about that. I don't really understand that.
Because, like, the lower your center of gravity is, the more you can lean into
the
corners.
Tip the bike in. To me, it looked like Van Aert was taking bad lines. Like, Vingegaard would go way wider before the corner and then undercut him through the apex. So I don't know if it was that too much. I think Vingegaard is just a better descender technically than Van Aert. Maybe there is something to it. And so we have this situation of Van Aert, the group ahead, by the way. Van Aert's waited. The group ahead is Guerrero, Johannessen, Kwiatkowski, Paulus, and Shaw. So a group of five, all going to stage.
I need to note for a second, there was a KOM fight group on top of the Tourmalet, and Guerrero absolutely elbowed Johannessen.
Oh, yeah, that was despicable.
That is just relegation 100%, maybe even worse.
He lost this. Johannessen beat him in the KOM sprint and remonstrated with him at the same time.
But hey, I just wanted to say that was fuck behavior by Guerrero. Anyway, that group was ahead, like you said, and it was getting towards 10, 20 seconds max towards the Wout van Aert, Vingegaard, Pogacar train behind with Paulus in the wheel as well, who was caught up with in that descent. So that group was coming together with 2 minutes and a half almost on the peloton behind. And it's a battle on two ends, eh? It's a battle for podium behind. Yep. It's a battle for GC at the front. Van Aert just keeps on trucking.
Were you surprised that Bora put Bookman on the front? Because they get to the valley, Ineos have done the descent. Ineos have Castroviejo, Pidcock, Rodriguez. So all of those guys are fighting for third at best. They're not beating Pog and Jonas. They stop on the descent and look. And Bora sent Bookman to the front, Benji.
Yeah.
Should they have switched at that phase into, okay, Pog and Jonas are literally 2 minutes ahead, 2.5 minutes ahead of us now. Should we keep Bookman to pace the final climb for Hindley? Because he can still drop other guys. Hindley finished best of the guys in that group.
Yeah.
So should they have used Bookman to pace the steep section of Cortere and get more time for third on GC at that point?
Probably, to be honest. I don't blame Hindley for trying to follow Pogacar on the Tourmalet itself. I'm not sure you agree with that. I'll give you a second. But I like that because he was maybe still thinking, okay, Pogacar yesterday was not what he was last year, for example, or the year before. So maybe this is a moment where I can try and benefit and get second. But then he dropped from Pogacar, and maybe when the gap was 2 minutes, they should have switched to the podium battle instead of fighting for second.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, should Jumbo Visma, Benji, should they have switched when Jonas didn't drop on Tourmalet to being a little bit more defensive? I mean,
it's really difficult, you know, because yesterday there was a major gap. Yesterday, the difference between Vingegaard and Pogacar was, to me, the difference that we saw in Le Grand Bornand between Pogacar and the rest of the competition. Because the only reason that Vingegaard doesn't take 3 minutes yesterday is because it's only Marie Blanc and not Calderon plus Colombier and so forth. So the gap was huge yesterday. They get over to Tourmalet and they don't see that difference. And maybe that's an indication to them where I'm like, okay, Pog is better. I was at that point at the top of Tourmalet, Pog is better. But I'm also at the point of like, maybe if they keep going, you can get the fatigue in more and you can still drop them at the end because there's still a steep section on Col Tret, but it's all risky.
That's the thing, because, you know, on Galibier, Poggi also looked $1 million and was actually paced the whole of the Galibier with Jonas in his wheel in the Grenon stage last year. The difference here is that the Col du Grenon is not the Col Tret climb. The Col Tret in the wheels, you're not doing as many, you know, the draft benefit is huge except for the last part. So Pogacar has a long time to recover, and also it's not that long a climb, you know, 3K is 10%. Marie Blanc is harder, but you still, like, if you drop so easily on Marie Blanc and you have a 3K 10% section after going full beans on Tourmalet, where I think, they smashed the 2021 record, then Jumbo probably, still think, okay, it's in play that Vingegaard has to try to drop him on Col Tret on the steep section.
Well, does he? As in, yes, he has to try it, but the other option is saying, okay, we gave it our all, I'll just give you the 4 seconds because I'm scared.
Well, yeah, you say Pogacar, you pace because you're behind Hindley more on GC, and make, say, Pogacar, if you want the stage, when you pace, is the option.
I don't know.
I think you have to try. Anyway, so
wait. I think as a Belgian, I need to put my fist on the table and say that I should have just gifted the stage to Wout van Aert.
It would have been tough to beat Johannessen, I think. Because, Van Aert is basically pacing the whole of the first, I think, 11 kilometers of Col Tret after doing the descent, after pacing Tourmalet. He paces the whole of that, the first part of that climb on the shallow section with Guerrero, Pogacar, Vingegaard, Shaw, Hindley, Kwiatkowski in his wheel. Super impressive performance. And it's a huge group that's fallen behind. And Ineos start chasing again this time? And they got Rodriguez there in the wheel, so they're trying to, I think, set up Rodriguez because Pidcock, I don't know. Rodriguez is looking like the better GC option for Ineos over Pidcock, who lost more time today. But yeah, we get to the moment, Benji. Wout van Aert's finishing his pool. We're 5Ks to go on Col Tret. The steep section is coming. Van Aert does his final lead out. He does his souplesse like he did last year on Altacam, and Vingegaard attacks, but it doesn't seem to have the same snap as yesterday, and Pogacar responds really, really easily in the saddle, in the wheel, and Vingegaard keeps going.
Yeah, Vingegaard keeps on pacing because maybe he thinks in his head, if I keep on pacing on this steep section, the fatigue might actually kill Pogacar, but I also was feeling like the tempo didn't seem hard enough to actually make that work. Because if he doesn't drop in that attack and you keep that same tempo that is a bit lower than that, maybe if Vingegaard risked it all and went all out, there might have been a crack, but we didn't see that crack. That kept on going, and gotta give some credit where due. Kwiatkowski held on for quite a fucking long time. That was insane. That was
a blast from the past.
That's Team Skytrain Kwiato right there.
I couldn't believe it. He was there for a long time as well. And that also made me think, like, in what world would Kwiatkowski be able to hang with Vingegaard attacking on 8, 9%, 10%? You know, for even a minute.
Yeah.
I don't see it. So after being in the breakaway, so either Kwiatkowski was much better, possible, or Vingegaard didn't have it. So at that point, Vingegaard just keeps pacing.
You blame him?
I think at a certain point, he should have stopped. And it just reminded me of Loge de Garde a little bit, actually, in Paris-Nice. I think maybe I'm not talking after 30 seconds. Yeah. I don't say just stop when Pogacar's in your wheel initially. You might not just drop Pogacar straight away. I'm not even saying after a minute, but I think when Pogacar's been there for 3-4 minutes and you're pacing, and this is not Ventoux either. Yeah. This is still not that serious a climb. Probably then he should have flicked Pogacar and gone into, okay, First of all, Jonas Sprint isn't terrible. If I sit in his wheel, he has to pull. Maybe if he pulls the whole way for whatever reason because of Hindley, I don't know. I can win the sprint. Very unlikely. But I think there was a point where Jonas should have been aware that Pogacar could counterattack him. And he didn't seem that aware of that because he seemed surprised when that did happen.
I agree with that awareness. When Pogacar attacked from the wheel, it was that snap, accelerative attack we know that Pogacar has. We saw it in Paris-Nice, for example. And it was very similar to Paris-Nice. Yeah, we spoke about it in our preview. Paris-Nice is kind of the difference between the two there was gigantic. Vingegaard just wasn't in shape there. And then right here, we see a blast from the past from that Paris-Nice where Pogacar does that attack and it instantly creates separation. Vingegaard tries to close that, but if the separation is there, it's very difficult to open yourself up to close that again. And the gap was there. And like you said, it seems like Vingegaard didn't expect it. And he probably should have had.
Because if he's already in Pogacar's wheel because he's flicked him and they stop. And because Vingegaard doesn't need to keep right. Like Hindley's like 3 minutes behind.
Yeah.
Like he's going into yellow as long as he doesn't get dropped by 50 seconds. And also this levels off a lot. So that becomes advantage. If Pogacar's now, I said it yesterday, on the flat, if Pogacar's not feeling as good as Vingegaard, of course Vingegaard has an advantage. But if he's equal and then this levels off to 6%, 4%, 5%, the last 2Ks, and you get dropped and Poggy's pulling at 400 watts, then you have a problem. So, yeah, I think he didn't seem to expect the attack at all because it's not like he just completely collapsed. He did get out of the saddle and sprint, but he's lost the draft. And Poggy's acceleration is his main weapon, and he used that to great effect. Vingegaard, and this is why I mentioned that, Vingegaard held the gap pretty stable at 6 seconds. It even looked like he was closing it a little bit.
The time gaps were Italian time gaps, they were,
but you could visibly see it. And then it leveled off, and Pogacar blew the gap out in the last 1,500 meters. So maybe Pogacar just was fresher. And
the mental gain probably of knowing that he just dropped Jonas Vingegaard, that dropped him yesterday, is such a major step for Pogacar as well that it might have actually given him a bit more watts than if he would have just been in the wheel of Jonas for this final. So that's a major step. And like you said, the gap exceeded, but also not to the extent that Pogacar takes that yellow jersey because he needed quite a bit of time, only 4 bonus seconds if you win the stage. He was on his way to win it.
Huge comeback from Tadej Pogacar. Drops Jonas Vingegaard after Jumbo Visma, set up the whole stage and road to basically try to put the Tour de France to bed. He flips the script, wins the stage, drops Vingegaard on Carl Toray and takes 24 seconds as well. 10th Tour de France stage win. Vingegaard keeps his yellow... Vingegaard keeps his GC lead, goes into the yellow jersey, but he's probably the most depressed person ever to go into a yellow jersey after what happened. But he's still 25 seconds ahead of Pogacar. Johannessen is what I mean. Johannessen finished on 1:22. Could Van Aert have beaten him? I don't know exactly. Guerrero and Shaw got dropped. Shaw, a good performance. Jai Hindley dropped most of the very large group behind, except for Rodriguez and Simon Yates. They lost 2:39. Adam Yates on 3:11. So a big gap behind there. Bardet rounding out the top 10 on 3:12 with Pidcock and Gaudu.
I won't lie, I was a bit skeptical when I saw Ineos pacing behind, but Rodriguez made that attack, and to be able to finish with Hindley and Yates and put time in some other competitors for that potential top 5, I am happy of what they did in hindsight. I was skeptical in the moment, but I'm happy in hindsight to see that Carlos Rodriguez is able to pull this off, that Jai Hindley is still in the podium battle. Simon Yates is up there as well. Adam Yates with a bit of a punch against him today, so Simon's become the better brother after 6 days of racing. But big question. Jumbo-Visma put out an all-out assault to put the Tour de France to bed, to destroy Hindley, to destroy Pogacar mainly, and to make sure they win the Tour de France in the first week. And let's be honest, towards the end of the stage, it backfires. But I can't blame them for trying after what happened yesterday.
Yeah, I think, obviously, I there's no way you can criticize attacking on Tourmalet because at no point was Vingegaard ever in danger of somehow losing time on Tourmalet.
Yeah.
It's the climb that suits him the most. He has Van Aert ahead.
Yeah.
And UAE have no one ahead.
Yeah.
So even if he has a problem or weak Tourmalet, that's fine. I also think if you're going to commit and go for the stage, Jonas has to attack on the steep section of Col Toray. Yep. Otherwise, you're just towing Poggy to a stage win if you do it easy. There was a certain point, as I said before, and I you know, I don't mean 1 minute or 2 minutes, because on Vaughan 2, Jonas attacked and didn't drop Poggy straight away. Yep. He then had to keep going a little bit. But there was a certain point where I think Jonas, yeah, did need to start thinking about not getting countered with Poggy in his wheel. And if he hadn't got taken by surprise, he still gets dropped probably. But I think he pulled a little bit too long on Col Toray. But yeah, obviously I thought after after yesterday.
Mate, I was terrified the story was over. Yesterday I was actually sad in the evening after podcast, because I thought if Jonas can make such a gap on such a climb like yesterday, I was scared he was going to do it every single climb this Tour de France. So today was the best thing that could happen. The utterly best thing that could happen for this Tour de France and for our entertainment. So that's fucking amazing.
It's incredible. And, you know, this might happen again. We now have Puy de Dôme on Sunday, I think. On Sunday, we've got another test where we'll see these guys going against each other. So,
and about that, we saw after the first weekend, Pogacar had the advantage when it comes to bonus second, expected advantage. After yesterday, Jumbo saw weakness, so today they started to try and use it. First of all, I am scared that Jonas might become a bit scared of Pogacar to the point that they might not dare to do these moves anymore, while Pogacar will probably be the attacker now.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. You know, will UAE now, buoyed by what happened today, pace for the stage win on Puy de Dôme? Seriously, like...
It's fucking true.
You know, or will Jumbo, who... after Marie Blanc would have said, you know, we'll go for the stage on Puy de Dôme.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, like, was Jonas bad today? I haven't seen the Watts, but breaking the Tourmalet record and, you know, and also pulling the whole time, I don't think he was terrible either. Yeah. So I think the reality is one thing's clear. Pogacar was way better than on stage five for whatever reason. And then when that's the reality, when will Jonas drop Pogacar on a climb like Col Toray? Even, you know, when we look at a finish climb like Col Toray, we'll say Pogacar will win that climb. That's a Pogacar climb. It's, you know, not too steep for too long. It's a long climb. Yeah. But so it's then once it's peak Poggy, it's like, well, but there is obviously the fatigue from before. Yeah, he was just too good and he played it perfectly. And the way he countered right at the end, he lulled Jonas to sleep. And yeah, really, really impressive from him. And UAE will be buoyed from it. You know, going into second, I'll read out the GC, but winning the stage, they're second of the week. I think UAE. They won the V8s and this is their second.
Yes, correct.
They win the stage. And Vingegaard goes into the yellow jersey, 25 seconds ahead of Pogacar. Hindley drops down to third on 134, but he's got it still. Because the breakaway yesterday, a very healthy gap on Simon Yates on 314.
Mate.
Rodriguez on 330. Adam Yates on 340. Gaudu on 403. Bardet 443. Pidcock also on the same time. And Kuss moves into 10th on 528. Landa and O'Connor were still riding full for GC there, like 11th and 12th, around with Bull Bow. So there was a huge shakeup today. I think these are now the GC, like Bookman's out, Ciccone's out, he's full gone, Schelmers is out. Hindley will defend third now. And I think Hindley is going to be come under attack from Jayco, from Ineos, from Groupama for third.
We can say that, but on the other end, right now it's a two-horse battle, and I feel like those teams will decide how the race is run throughout this Tour de France. If UAE decides this is the stage we're going to absolutely try to destroy, they're going to do that, and the other people are going to be passengers. They're going to be NPCs at the back trying to survive. And maybe if they're both ahead, Jonas and Tadej, in the group ahead, maybe then you've got a fight behind where teammates start pacing for, like we saw today.
Yeah.
But that scenario is so... doesn't happen often. Usually you just have mano-a-mano fights behind the best GC riders. But I'm absolutely amazed at what happens today. I think this is truly the best thing that could have happened for this race after yesterday, where I was a bit worried for the entertainment level of the Tour de France. Jai Hindley, I don't see as a competition for the top two places, obviously.
No.
After today.
And he looked good for third, to be honest. It's not just that he has a very healthy gap of 1 minute 40 on Simon Yates, but he also he dropped Adam. Yeah, he dropped the other guys, and he was kind of probably isolated and pacing himself. So I think Hindley, I think Jayco, FDJ, and this is what's curious to me of yesterday, Benji. I was really surprised that, first of all, FDJ, yeah, pulled in the break with Matawaz.
Yeah.
Jayco had a guy in the break as well.
Yep.
And Ineos. Ineos with Fraylor made Hindley's gap happen. And that's his gap.
Yep.
On those guys for the podium. So
his gap is there because of them. It would have been a smaller gap, half a minute difference maybe.
I think he gets caught if Ineos don't pull full with Fraylor and
but he would have been with Vingegaard over the line.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So exactly, but it would be less. So I am surprised that they didn't pull in hindsight for yesterday, but you know, a lot of things can play out differently. Another thing I noticed from this stage is Pogacar was flexing his wrist a lot on the descent. I don't know whether that was just for the cameras.
No, that was seemingly something, because he was doing that so much in the descent. It's logical because
and he didn't know the camera was there. It wasn't next to him. It was like he was doing it all the time with the camera, like bike way away.
Obviously, I'm a terrible descender. When I descend, I hold my steer so tightly
that
my hands hurt all the time. Even if you are a competent descender, I can imagine that because you're leaning forwards and so forth, the pressure on your hands and on your elbow and on your wrist and so forth must be so much harder than on an uphill section. So I truly think that hurts him more in a descent. And it's logical that it hurts him more. I just hope it doesn't influence him too much on the climb so that we have a battle.
Going over, you know, 80, 90 kilometers an hour over chip seal road surface, the vibrations in your hands are crazy. And as you said, you get, you know, descending Ordino, it's a 11-minute descent, 10-minute descent.
Mate, I did 25 minutes on it.
Oh, it might have been raining.
It was snowing, so.
You know, yeah, your hands, it is very fatiguing on the wrists. Obviously, these guys are a little bit better than us downhill, but that's just something I noticed, that it's very, very clear that Vingegaard is a better technical descender than Pogacar at the moment. Whether that's wrist, whether that's technique anyway, I'm not sure, but there were times, and I think Vingegaard noticed on the descent that he could get Pogacar off the wheel in corners. How that could be used as an advantage, I'm not really sure, to be honest, at least not in for the rest of this week. So we have a Tour de France. We were looking down the barrel
Fuck, man, this is amazing.
Because 2021, I remember it because I'm scarred for life. First year of covering cycling.
Yeah.
First full year of covering cycling full-time, and first time I had the ASO rights for the Tour, and then Pogacar, Grand Bonon, 3 minutes, bang. Teen, another minute, bang. First rest day, I was like, and it's hard to get people interested when someone's 5 minutes ahead. So certainly we don't have that here. Jumbo Visma back to the drawing board, Benji.
Well, they're going to be a bit scared after today.
I think so. As I said, obviously I didn't expect this to happen today.
Me neither. I really
didn't expect this to happen. So whether it's, and we'll see with the numbers, whether it's Vingegaard underperforming, I don't think so. I think Pogacar was just really, really good, and he's back on his top level, so that's good for the race.
One more thing I want to note. There's a battle at the front of the race always. There's also a battle at the back of the race to try and stay within contention. Jakobsen crashed a few days ago. I'm fairly certain he made it in time. At least our YouTube chat is telling me that he made it in time. So if I'm wrong, it's all these people in the YouTube chat.
Okay. Well, listen to the YouTube chat. I'm sure they are. Yeah. I never watch it. I have to focus on the profiles or all the notes, otherwise I get lost. Okay, tomorrow. Oh, yeah, this was a great... By the way, this race already compared to the Giro, the GC action is mental.
Half the stage of the last 2 days has more GC action than the entire Giro.
Stage 7 tomorrow from Mont-de-Marsan to Bordeaux. Now, this should be a more chill stage. I don't know if there's crosswinds up at Bordeaux. It's a flat sprint stage. We have one categorized climb. It's 1.2Ks, 4%, 1 KOM point. Irrelevant. There's an intermediate sprint at Grignol. It's a flat stage. This is, I think, 800 meters climbing total over the 170 kilometers. It's a pure bunch sprint. Jakobsen, I believe, made the time cut today. He might still be riding.
The chat told us.
Okay, apparently he made it. Good for him. But I don't know how he'll be affected by that crash, even for the sprint tomorrow, because it was one for him in Kronenwegen. Who do you think, Benji? Because Philipsen's climbing so well, and so these hard stages, he will be able, surely he's at an advantage. That's why we liked him for the Champs-Élysées, because he seems to recover better than the pure sprinters too.
And it's also a major advantage when it comes to the green jersey, and he doesn't really need to go in the breakaways to take points if he just wins every single sprint. That
and
being
Van
said,
Van Aert's not even going for the points.
Vanderpool is lead out. Jaeskevel, he said before the stage, I'm not going to try because I want to save myself for Philipsen tomorrow. Philipsen won the other day. Yeah, today he didn't save himself. I don't think that's going to influence it at all. No. I still find it a shame that he didn't try in Jaeskevel. That being said, Philipsen is the favorite for the sprint. But I want someone else to win because I like someone else winning sometimes. So I'm going to go for Welsford again because he's probably lurking in the chat. So might as well give his name. Or he's probably still riding.
Maybe he's still riding. Hopefully he makes it. So this sprint tomorrow looks, it's got a few roundabouts in the last 10 kilometers. There's a deviation and then they go, it looks like they do a 90 degree right-hand turn at 3.5 and then basically a double back on themselves. Before doing an S bend into the final finishing straight on the river in Bordeaux on the southern or western side. And then the last 2Ks are about pretty straight. I think it looks gently bending, but not to the finish looks pretty straight.
Do you believe at any point that Bauhaus can win a stage? Because their lead out was good on stage four, but
yeah.
I feel like he's always going to be that second tier sprinter on the second line, no?
Yeah, you're right. It feels like even if he gets in good position, there's always going to be someone faster because there's so many fast guys in this race. You know, say he gets in a really good position and Philipsen has made a mistake and is for whatever reason, then there'll be a Jakobsen.
If he does a Welsford.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and he lost Van der Poel in the moto circuit the other day. Who will win this sprint? I think Philipsen will win. I'm going to go with Caleb Ewan. The Aussies are having a good week so far. I'm going to go with Ewan. Because he looked all right on the other day, and I know Guarnieri's out, but he's been having good position too. So I'm going to go Caleb Ewan.
Shocking.
Yeah, I never pick Ewan actually for much. But you went Welsford, I went Ewan, so we got an Australian 1-2 tomorrow.
Mine's going to win.
Your one's going to win. Anything else?
Dinner's on whoever loses.
Fair enough. What happens when, who's another, not Sepp Kuss.
Sepp Kuss GC is on, mate. He's standing for GC.
Sepp Kuss should ride for GC. After Jonas' capitulation today, come on.
Yeah, he's the real leader.
Yeah, Van Aert's got to go for stages and Kuss GC because Jonas don't have it.
Do you reckon that Van Aert can win a stage in this Tour de France?
Yeah, of course.
Very likely, but he's missed out on six so far. And when it comes to these sprints, yes, he can compete. Can he win one of these sprints? I always feel like he's going to end second or third because he's that kind of sprinter that he has the way to stay ahead, but then the accelerative sprinters are able to get past him in the final stretch.
Stage 8 is the one that... Stage 8 is like a softer version of Lausanne or Longwy. So then, I think, yeah, so Stage 8 looks really, really good for him.
Philipsen though as well, eh?
10 is kind of hard. No, I think Stage 8 is on the limit for Philipsen if those climbs are done really, really hard. They're like back to back to back to back and it's uphill. So I think that's tough even for Philipsen. He could be there, but I wouldn't be surprised to actually see Van der Poel. But we'll get to that stage after tomorrow. Tomorrow is a pure bunch sprint. Some will regale us with the wind conditions in the Bordeaux region, but I don't think there'll be crosswinds either. I haven't heard talk of that. And usually Twitter gets wind of that before.
It's the wind of that.
Well, how good. Thanks very much for tuning in. The Tour de France is not dead. It's still back on. And we'll see you with the recap of the sprint stage tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.